Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Good for Construction, a podcast dedicated to architects and architecture in India. And I'm your host, Isha Bajaj. In season one, we talk to architects across India who are now successfully running their own enterprises and companies. We talk to them about their journeys of the transition from architecture school to getting a job and finally starting their own business. So today we have in studio Surbhi and Dipanshu from Cyan. Welcome, guys.
Hey. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
To give our listeners a little context, Cyan is a young architecture firm established in 2018. They are a studio that derives from the personalities and distinctive thought processes of their team and collaborators. Attuned to a crafting atmosphere, they view their studio as a platform to transform expression into tangible spaces. The founders of Cyan, Surbhi Singhal and Dipanshu Arneja, are both graduates from Sushant School of Art and Architecture, Gurgaon. Surbhi has a master's degree from TU Delft, where she specialized in public buildings, architecture and interiors. And Dipanshu has a master's degree also from TU Delft with a specialization in architecture engineering, building technology and material innovation. So now that we're here, I mean, let's start by talking about how you guys collectively or individually thought and felt that now is the right time to start our own work.
Mm. Isha, on this, I can clearly say that there was not one clear moment. Mm. Like when I can say that, yeah, I am ready for this firm. Right. But what I can definitely say is that it happened, I think, post graduation when I was working professionally. And I think I can say for him also, because we were on the same page at that moment.
Right.
And while working professionally, I realized that I was working through some other person's perspective and their approach and style of thinking towards design. And I realized that I have my own approach and my own style.
Right.
And to project that, I realized that maybe this is the right time. I should start thinking about maybe having my own office, my own business.
Right.
But then I can again say that that was not the exact time when I started my firm.
Right.
I started working towards it from that moment.
Actually, she's very right, because when you're working with different professionals and, you know, especially because architecture is such a subjective field, you're always working through somebody else's lens.
Absolutely.
But there is definitely a time when you know that you're either going with it or you have something else to offer.
Hmm. So did you guys know, obviously, I mean, it's a very individualistic
yes,
art.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when did you guys feel that now we have, or I have, my own style that I want to put?
You don't know it, because, you know, from when you're just outside the college, you want to learn more. Your base has been very theoretical.
Right.
Then you're suddenly pushed into a very practical world. And sooner or later, you realize what the gamut is, what the game is actually about.
Right.
But, you know, you will actually definitely, everyone, I think, both of us did, and I'm very sure that each one of us does, that you come across a point where you know that, okay, maybe I have a different take on something.
Right.
And then you have to analyze it, see if that take is scalable. I mean, can you convert it into a business? Can you convert it into a firm? Do you want to showcase it through architecture, through photography, through cinema? What? But unless and until you know that, you know, maybe I have a take on something, especially on a space, because we're architects here. When you know that you have a take on space, you have a vision for space, and you have a sort of an inkling that you can do it in a different way, in a very unique way, in a very you way.
Right.
That's when you start analyzing if it can be made scalable.
But I can still say that this is not also the step when you realize that you want to start your firm. This is only getting a bit of understanding that you
maybe
have
you
approach.
Have your own style. You have your own approach. And then for us, it happened just after our graduation when we were interning. And then when we discussed it, we realized it's a very common
understanding.
Yeah, very, very common thing that happened to both of us.
Right.
Then we gave it thought, and then we gave or spent a lot of time, our masters and our eventual internships, our work, into honing that style, into coming to really out to our own shell.
Right.
And that is when, you know, you reach a point where you say, okay, now I can start my own firm.
Right.
But it's really germinates.
It is an entire process. It's not one moment, I can say.
It's not a moment.
It takes a lot of time to
definitely
think about
you will know it, because it is a very, very, as you said, it's a very personal thing, and it will come to you what you want to do.
Right.
And if maybe you have a very, very personal take, That's what we
feel. So it's like an ongoing process that
it's
kind of
you discuss,
know,
discover
simmering
that in yourself
somewhere at the back of your head, and then you just suddenly realize that now is the right time.
Because you know, it's also possible that, you know, I know people that are working in the same very firm, and they feel okay, maybe this firm is actually the projection of what they want to do.
Absolutely.
Then they go with the flow. Then they go with the firm. Then there is no need for you to actually start something of your own.
Right.
And but when you know that, okay, I have something very, very individualistic, very, very personal, distinctively mine to offer, that's when you start the process. When it starts.
So it's interesting that you guys mentioned that during your job right after undergraduation, you guys spoke and you guys, you know, discussed it. And you guys felt like you were in the same boat with this. Would it be right to call like this the beginning of Sayan's partnership? Or did that not...
Like that moment after
that
professionally?
Moment, like generally that pace that you guys were in.
No, Sayan actually, for us... collaboration started at that moment.
Right.
We started projecting our life and our education towards that direction.
Right.
But Sayan actually happened for us during our masters.
You know that when I discussed it with Surbhi, we know that we were on the same page.
Right.
And we already, you know, that starts a good collaborative sort of venture.
Right.
And then, you know, it's not just work. When we used to discuss, we used to go for movies, we used to go for dinners, we used to attend concerts, we used to listen to music, everything tells you, okay, maybe this is going in some direction that you can collaborate even with your distinctive, like, I think we have very distinctive personalities, but somewhere we were on the same page. And then we got to do our masters from the same university, so almost it was coincidental when we felt that, okay, now we have done our masters, we both saw each other in each other that personal style coming up, and then we again analyzed it, if it can be collaborated, mixed into a venture, mixed into a firm, and then after masters, it was a very careful, conscious, slow decision to reach where we wanted to start our own firm. You know, starting something of your own is a very, very daunting, a very challenging
Very
proposition.
Daunting, I agree.
It's not that you are going to wake up one day and say, okay, I want to start something of my own.
Also, you question yourself like quite a lot of times.
A lot of times,
Like, are you really ready for it?
Right.
Are you ready to handle the every aspect of a business?
Exactly.
It's not just design.
I mean, fundamentally what you're offering, I mean, you see so many students graduating as architects every year after 5 years of college, and you know, you have to really see, can you really offer something different? Is there really a need for you to start something of your own? Because, you know, working in a firm and starting your own, even though the scope of it is the same, it's a very different game. I mean, I don't have to say it. It's a very...
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's quite
it's
evident.
Yeah,
it's quite
given.
Evident.
Yeah.
So interesting that, Surbhi, you brought this up, that it's quite daunting, the experience of starting your own firm, and you're not sure of yourself if you'll be able to handle that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
So my next question is actually, it's coming from a space where I am curious, how much experience working for someone else is enough experience?
I can just say from my personal experience, working for somebody, you can understand architecture professionally, like how you can execute design and how some person from the firm gives you a design sketch maybe, and then you know how to execute it. So that is one aspect. But then there are a lot of things that you miss also while working professionally as well. But when I would say there is no limitation to it, because until and unless you handle a project solely, like completely by yourself, you can't understand each aspect of it.
So there are those check boxes that you must tick, like, acha, okay, I've been on site, okay, I've seen like one entire project from birth
I mean there are check boxes, but to really put it very clearly for you, the thing is that, you know, the most important step when you're working with somebody else is that it will help you position yourself.
Right.
It will help you to understand whether or not you want to start something of your own or you want to go with the flow. It's the real and I think the hidden part of working with somebody else is that it will help you identify what you want to do.
Right.
At the same time, it's going to expose you to different things that you are going to learn from them. Learning is there. You're going to go to a site, you're going to see how it works, how the drawings are done. But of course, they can only teach you
so much.
Yeah. They're not going to really teach you everything.
There are a lot of things that are still within you while you're working with somebody
else, but
which you can only explore when you're left open,
like,
when you are to your own.
Right.
Yeah.
And which I think only happened for me when I was working individually in my own firm.
Yeah.
Like, I was working professionally with another architect in London.
Hmm.
And he made me aware of a lot of different things, like, which I was not working here of, like, the way of the style of working in design, how you approach a particular project was very different for me. Because here in India, I worked a certain way. And there, it's a little different because architects have their own way of thinking. But until and unless you do on your own, you can't understand what you really want and what is your own style.
You gain whatever you can from an internship. And when you feel, it can be 1 year, it can be 2 years, it can be 10 years, it can be 20 years. When you feel the need to branch out, you will branch out.
Yeah.
But until then, the person you're working with will help you position your interests better, your skills better.
Right.
Learn as much as you can.
Hmm.
But when you feel that, okay, I want to branch out, I have something different to offer, that's when you start preparing for it. It's also possible that you're preparing for it simultaneously while working with that person.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no general
limitation to it. How many years?
But
it's about just finding, I think, yourself and how much you want to achieve and what is
now we have answered this question as people who have branched out. But also now when I want to answer this from a person who's actually running the firm, it's always better to spend a minimum of 2 to 3 years working with a person or working in one space. It can be different firms, but in the same direction so that you know what you really want from your life.
Absolutely.
Because I think these smaller ventures or these firms and these different people will help you really position yourself in what space do you want to go, what space you're comfortable with. I mean, it's work and you earn money. That's all there. But there are larger things than that as well.
There needs to be a genuine push on the fire. A fire in the belly to kind of, you know, realize.
And
that is only within yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
And then you realize it. Sounds so, how should I say, so, you know, so wordy, so philosophical, but it really has a lot of weight in it.
Yeah.
That push, that fire, that you want to do something of your own is going to be the foundation of that startup. That will
I think it'll sustain you.
And that really drives you also all the years. Like starting years are really the tough when you're finding projects, when you're looking for projects.
Yeah.
That when you already know that you want to do it, then it's you don't have to look back.
Right. So the decision to go for your masters, how did you guys decide and feel that now is the time, let's apply?
While we were interning and while we were working, we realized that there are broadly two ways to gain more experience or to excel in this field.
Right.
First is you keep working in the field.
Hmm.
And the second is the academic knowledge that you can gain.
Right.
We both were, and it can be a very personal thing as well, we both were not very satisfied with how our graduation went.
Right.
It can also be because we didn't know what we were seeking out of our graduation.
Right.
It was just after our school. You don't even know what you're looking for, and it jumps at you, and then you're confused at the end. I think it happens to a lot of people.
I think it happens to everyone.
Like,
especially in architecture, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone because comes out more confused.
More confused.
And this is funny because our parents are like, okay, bacha architect ban gaya, like, hello, I have no idea what I'm doing.
And so I was very driven to a very theoretical side of architecture, and I missed out on the technical bit of it.
Right.
It always was pushing me down, bringing me down, and I wanted to hone it.
Okay.
And I chose for myself an academic setup to gain it.
Right.
I could have done it through my professional work, but I thought I will do it through a master's degree.
Formal education.
Yeah, through a formal education.
Mm. Yeah.
Also because I think that choosing a master's program or choosing what you want, my professional life really exposed me to the bits where I could really improve.
Hmm.
And that's when I thought, okay, maybe academic bit is something that I really need. It was almost to satisfy what I couldn't gain from my graduation.
Right.
Similarly, I think
For me, it was very personal, I would say. In my professional career also, I was always looking for my own way of, my own approach, my own school of thought while designing.
Right.
And I couldn't find it.
Like,
not in my bachelor's, not even my professional life also. Because I was, during my bachelor's, I was still exploring what architecture is.
Exactly.
Like, you don't understand even after 5 years.
Yeah.
And professionally, you start working towards more practical aspect of architecture. But there was still something that I feel I was lacking in.
Right.
And I wanted to do and work towards more architecture aspect of it.
Right.
And that's why I started thinking of doing a master's program, maybe in core architecture,
right,
where I can think and find my own style, my own perspective and way of designing,
right,
which happened in Netherlands.
Right.
And that's why I envisioned the entire master's like that. So
okay.
I chose the semesters particularly in which I can derive my own school of thought, my own design
right.
perspective,
right.
my own approach towards design.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it took quite a lot of time for me to understand and interacting with a lot of different people.
Mm.
Like there are people who have done their bachelor's and
right.
they're doing their master's, but
right.
then they have their own sensibilities and very different from ours. So it gave me a lot of exposure. And maybe during my master's, maybe in the last few months, it happened when I felt very confident about my own style.
Right.
And then only I could say I can start my own firm.
Right.
Not before that.
Uh-huh. So
it happened very later in my master's.
Achha. So what was the project that you guys did or you did that gave you that confidence?
I think for her, it wasn't really about the project. I think it never is. It is about it really is about your mentor, your professor.
Yeah,
when you're doing a formal,
I think it's not about the type of project.
It never
it's
is,
about,
yeah.
For me, it was personally very much about the mentor.
Yeah.
Because my mentor really pushed me.
Right.
First, we just had some kind of collaboration which helped me finding myself.
Right.
And
Similar, very similar.
The entire year, maybe the last year, I can say, like architecture has these typical ways of making models.
Right.
But the way he used to understand these spaces in architecture with the models was very interesting.
Okay.
And that is something I resonated with.
I mean, the thing is that it really never is about about your project. It really is about the mentor and the kind of approach and the design approach that they have. I mean, her mentor had a very distinctive way to approach architecture and it was very heavily dependent on making models. So now when she has her style and it is her own style, making models is a very, very interesting part of it.
So he uses the similar approach to design his architecture and his buildings.
Right.
But that helps me to now visualize my own style.
Yeah.
You finally found your medium to express
I found my medium.
Yourself.
But I made models in bachelor's also.
Yeah.
But I can say in Netherlands, it was still different because from the very beginning, we were making models. It was just not the end product.
Right.
So even deriving design, deriving every step of design, models were used.
Right. Yeah.
And that really helped me to translate my basic sketch or maybe an impression drawing to its last stage.
For me, my mentor was very, very specific, let's say very, very focused on the end product. So I was doing a project for affordable housing, and at the end I had to deliver a strategy in which that affordable housing could be made of a different material. So I had to really make a material, innovate in it.
Oh wow.
And this kind of push that you get from a mentor to innovate, to think outside the box is actually the biggest takeaway that you can get from a master's degree. Because there's so many colleges offering so many different different projects.
Yeah,
and we were also doing two different projects. But the thing is that the idea of her mentor focusing really on making models, on making tangible spaces, and my tutor wanting a tangible result at the end really has defined our...
That has really resonated in both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
Even though our projects were different, our mentors were different.
That's a big takeaway.
We were taught the same thing.
Right.
Almost, you know, we were really...
Just different approaches.
Different approaches, yeah.
And then maybe in 2 years, you see so many different ways and style of working. You just find your own style in the end.
Yeah.
And that is what is important. Yeah. And I think that gives a lot of confidence also.
For example, let's say in our college, in my graduation college, and I think it's common with a lot of other colleges as well, is that, you know, model is just a requirement.
Right.
You know, at the end, you just make a model.
It's like
in bachelor's, it happened for us.
Yeah.
The model was an end product for me.
End product,
always. But for us, we were supposed to make a 1:50 model, a 1:20 model.
Like, I was making models of 1:5 details.
Yeah.
He's right.
And then.
They were, you can see beams, you can see small sections,
you can
have your wooden details.
And then
it was a model.
Yeah.
And then it really, because then when you make it by hand, it's not, you can't mess it up.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong.
You can't have any doubts.
So imagine
about
every week,
and everything will show.
Yeah. Every week you're making a model.
Yeah.
And then they and
like I used to have he's right. I used to have Friday sessions with my tutor, and Saturday morning I was again in the model workshop making models.
Yeah.
Every
so
week
every
I was
Monday
making
we were making models, and then it's just not making models. Then they have a very, they also, you know, made us or maybe think about analyzing it, maybe photographing it in a way, using lights in a certain way, using daylight in a way, changing forms in
we
a way.
Like, there was one another very interesting exercise that we did was making 1:20 model, which was just about one interior space of my project, just one interior space. So it was a 1.5 meters long model, just showing one view of the building, and we were actually putting materials on top of it and photographing that.
Yeah, but when you will see it in front of you, I'm telling you, it will change how you think about architecture. It will change you within a week.
Wow.
It will, it will help you bring much closer to the discipline, and that this intimacy with the discipline, I completely was never aware of. Yeah,
but like feel with the materials, like every small thing.
Right.
If you want the building to be a soft building, a hard building, or a very fragile building, all that just comes out.
I mean, you know, the thing is that we now, I think we've come more passionate and much more aware of
what
a discipline
doing,
can entail.
Hmm.
And that kind of confidence now helps us really also push our startup forward. I mean, push it forward, start it from the base and take it forward, because we are very passionate about it now.
Mm.
We think about it. We can reflect on it. We are in a grip of it.
Right.
I mean, we have a grip of it.
Right.
And I think that is what is, I think we were lacking and what our masters gave us. And then eventually is now.
It is about collaboration.
Yeah, now formed into our firm, which is.
It's interesting, like, when you guys mentioned that tactile nature of.
Yeah.
Generally, I think architecture, like even with models or materials, like you said, that was missing in undergraduation. And I completely resonate with that. Like, I completely agree, because I would always have these doubts in my mind that, okay, how thick really is a beam now?
Yeah.
What do I do about
that's
it?
True.
Do I make, it's,
those
I,
are the very basic questions
basic
that you have.
Yeah.
And we are so dependent on theory for it.
Yeah.
We never really see it in that scale.
Yeah.
And when you see it in that scale,
there's a basic logic that you can apply.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to work out formulas.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know that you need this thick beam in this space.
Yeah.
But the kind of effect it will have, you
know. On the interior and on the exterior both.
Yeah, you're never aware of it.
Yeah.
And slowly, when you start exploring it, and let's say, we have discussed this so many times, that model making is such an important part of it.
Right.
Even for our projects, smaller projects, like we are doing a very small residence, a very small kiosk, to a very big school project that we're doing, we are using this technique, and it is really bringing us even more closer
also,
to our...
It really helps us to convince the clients.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it really makes us really confident.
Yeah.
Because if... Until and unless the client is convinced, there's nothing that you can do.
I mean, our client has just recently commissioned us a large portion of a fund for just a 1:20 model. I mean, how many...
Wow.
And it's a residence. I mean,
great.
How many times do you hear it?
Almost
never,
actually.
Never,
yeah.
No. Because the clients are never really shown a model. They never come close to
it. It's always a 2D expression.
Yes, yes.
And we don't underestimate a 2D impression as well, because a 2D impression is what usually gets us all our projects.
Right.
And whatever we are able
to
get.
Because at a studio, we always start with this... impression drawing.
We call it impression.
We call it an impression drawing, which is a very personalized impression of a space that we are imagining.
Yeah,
right.
I mean it helps us and the clients and everybody in the team to understand. Okay, this is the actual state, and this is going to be let's say a unique, personalized, best possible.
Right.
And this from actual to unique possible best. I mean, personalized impression is what we start with. It's a 2D drawing, a very, very simple 2D for computer generated graphic.
Right.
And then that's what we use in our elevator pitches and in all our bids. And I think it has shown wonderful results. I think we really underestimate, and in fact we don't recognize the strength that we have when we come to expressing or representing our work.
Right.
We undermine drawing so much, we don't put in effort to it.
We should really spend time in making
I mean, it's going to be your biggest tool. I mean, if you're able to represent your ideas and in the ways you can represent it, is going to be the biggest tool when you're starting.
Because, also winning the projects. Because I remember recently after coming from the Netherlands, we started our firm already, like 4 months back.
Right.
And I think the first project we received was based on the impression.
It's a very interesting story.
It's a very interesting story.
So in her neighborhood, there were two brothers who were actually, they wanted to get a house constructed.
Oh, this is in Meerut.
This is the first project going on.
Yeah, it's in Meerut. So basically they wanted to get their house done.
Right.
They were looking for architects for 6 months. 6 months.
They were interviewing people, and
they were interviewing people. They were asking for drawings, and everybody used to go to them through a photograph from the internet. Okay, maybe this is how it's going to look for you. And and when we had a first meeting with them,
it's like a cheap mood board.
So they, in the first meeting that we had with them, they said, okay, you know, we are going to give you a try, but you're so young, you're just here. I mean, we don't trust you completely.
Yeah.
Okay, give us something. Maybe show us how our foyer is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come with us with a mood board or any drawing that I see on the internet in the next 9 months, I'm going to take away the project from you.
Oh my God.
He's very, very...
Also, he said that if you really have to do that, then even I can do that.
Yeah,
it's very easy. And I totally agree with
that. Why should I pay you for it?
So then our elevator pitch had a series of 2D impression drawings of how their foyer is going to look like, how their staircase is going to look like, how their bedroom is going to look like.
Right.
And somehow they could visualize their house completely through it.
Just with those drawings. It
and
was not
luckily or coincidentally our school of thought and what they wanted to do
matched
and we got a first project. I mean, it is a huge project. It's 2,000 square yards. It's a huge project, and
it's a nice project.
And we never expected it
we didn't expect it to happen so soon after the masters.
But then
the medium and the medium you use to represent your work is very important
very
in architecture
important,
because the language you speak is the drawings. It's not anything else.
And I think that's missing from school, because the reason why you guys are saying what you're saying, that, you know, there's so many mediums to express yourself and we don't explore enough of it. I think it's because in bachelor's, like, we're, I don't know if it's like a thing where they say, "Acha, model bhi chahiye, ye bhi chahiye, ye itne drawing hone chahiye, itne sheet hone chahiye." I think that's kind of limiting.
But tell me, you make so many models, you make so many sheets, but you're ultimately dependent on what you're saying. But now we recognize that visual medium is the strongest tool that you have
as an architect.
I
agree with that, because to clients also we always convince with the representation, those drawings, and that is really effective.
And our education in the Netherlands for a master's, I mean, you know, when we first were discussing master's, we got such discouraging reviews from everybody.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, why, when you're going to come back, you're going to start from the same space, you know how architecture
works.
Are
you going to do job there?
But it completely gave us such a brilliant new grip on our own discipline that we were working for 5 years, we were acquainted for 5 years through our undergrad, and then again for 2 years that I was working here, but I was never aware of it. And this sort of trust or this sort of focus on 2D drawings, on visual media,
on your own skill,
came from our masters.
It came from our masters. I can truly agree with that.
So I think in hindsight, it was a good move for us to actually
pursue it. It worked for us. Now it's working in the benefit of Sian also, because
absolutely,
we are kind of getting projects from that.
And Sian came from your masters in a way.
Yes.
It's very, very, very interesting and very refreshing to hear all of this.
In Netherlands, you, or maybe anywhere, I'm not sure, but then in Netherlands specifically, even if you checkbox all the things in the requirement list, you can still fail in the course.
That's do you think like that should become, like, should come
no,
to
but,
India?
No, but I think, but you know, this is, whatever you're saying is all correct, but it's also a huge stereotype. I mean, you know, when... the education, at least what was in my undergrad, really came from how the students were. We were so attuned to getting marks that all our education was about getting marks.
And I
was also part of the cycle. I mean, I remember making 20, 25 sheets for my thesis. And you know, it's just so pointless because not one drawing, I think, really represents of what I was thinking.
Because it was about the bulk production and not really about putting that much effort in just two or three drawings.
Exactly, what I was getting at, bulk production.
Bulk production, you know,
that kind of
thing. I think that is also something very contrasting from what we experienced there.
But it really, you know, the thing is that it's not a benchmark because there are so many different colleges that you can go for masters and many colleges have different approaches.
Yeah.
Only we were in a space, this university in the Netherlands, it's called TU Delft. It's in the Netherlands and this university is not very, very dependent on your grades.
Right.
Because also,
and also, that was your criteria of selection?
Yeah, but it also stems out, what I want to say is, stems out of the culture that Dutch students have. Achoo. I mean, the Dutch students don't really work for marks. They never do it. They've never done it since their upbringing.
Basis from, like, even in school, they're not there for that.
Their real focus is on actual innovation and sort of breaking the barrier, their own barrier.
Also, their own satisfaction. Are they satisfied from the course?
Yeah.
Are they really happy about doing it?
Yeah.
It's not about just completing it.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. No,
that's so amazing to see.
It's
also
so liberating. I can't tell you how liberating it was.
There is no pressure of just passing and just completing the course.
You know, I'll give you a very small example. I mean, I remember Surbhi did a project. She completed everything. She made all the possible drawings. Everything was a tick. Just the doors and windows she proposed for the project were not going with the form of the project. I mean, they were there, technically right. The drawings were there, but they were not just resonating with the overall form.
Right.
And she was told to stay back that project.
Oh my God.
I mean, everything was right. And she was asked to stop and then take 2 weeks off and then come up with a door window schedule that matches overall form.
Just
the door window schedule.
Which we usually do in a form in a tour. 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Who really focuses on whether or not your door is looking like or is going with the entire form?
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought about it.
Right.
But
I don't think anybody would have thought about something like
that. And
this.
Then they told her to stay for, I think, 2 weeks.
I think 10 days. They gave me the time of 10 days.
And then she had to just give door and window
just
drawing
door and window
that goes with the building.
Everything
and
else
was
fine for them.
Yeah.
Nothing changed.
So
then,
what did you do different in this case?
I think I just took time to understand actually that what they were wanting from me. And then I started, because my project was a little form-based project.
Right.
And my doors and windows were not going with the form.
They
so
were standard.
It took me time to understand what they really were telling it to me.
Yeah.
So I made details and then I worked
so
on
the entire
the
door
entire
window
design.
Schedule had almost become an exercise in itself. You know, a form-based exercise.
It actually required that much time.
Yeah.
It took me 10 days to completely do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was.
It couldn't be done in two days. I can guarantee that.
Yeah. And now every time we are making a door window schedule.
You're conscious.
We are conscious about the fact.
Might just get a redo.
But that's important because.
So the point is that, you know, this. You understand how close we become or we have come to the.
With every element of the building.
Yeah, every element. Something you can't just do it for the sake of doing
it. You can't just
it has to be
production.
Yeah.
Like, bana do bhai, chalo laga do, ye bhi laga do. Like,
yeah.
It's not like that.
Yeah.
Which is so nice. I mean, when you get to, when you get that kind of an opportunity where someone who's teaching you is kind of telling you that, listen, every part has to be okay with your idea.
You have to pay attention to each,
because
each
in
component
every
of the building.
Yeah, because in college, you will get away with 20 brilliant looking sheets, but when you're working it scales up to 200-250 drawings. I mean, it's a brilliant scale up even for smaller projects. And then it really becomes about, then you will understand how prioritizing, you know, a right way of representing what you want to do, what you want to get executed is really about. I think if it is one thing that people should, I mean, the students should be really pushed into you know, really making something hands-on so that they understand the scale of it actually.
Right.
What
right.
they are actually in for.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that should be the basis of starting an architecture course. That is something I would really say, because we don't start a bachelor's from that in India.
It's a pencil.
I don't think anywhere in India we start from that.
I mean, it should technically start with pencil and paper, but you should know what you're doing.
Yeah, we had this, so I remember, this takes me back to first year, my first class of AD, and we were asked to bring an orange or an apple, and they were trying to teach us what a section is and what a plan is and all of that elevation, all of that. And I remember, how ridiculous is this? What are they trying to do, you know? Like, I'm here to learn architecture. What are they doing? So, yeah, I mean, that was a very interesting exercise that kind of, you know, stuck with me for a really long time. And, you know, that's how I really understood.
Yeah, because it never happened to our batch. And I don't understand. I got hang of plan, sections and elevations very late in the process. Very late. Like, I think 5 months after. And I was always running around in the class to... You know, and there was this brilliant student who used to draft next to me, and I was always looking at her work, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, maybe this is a plan. Oh, maybe this is a section. Oh, maybe. And
So, because it was, I think, hands on.
Very hands on.
It left an impression.
Yeah, I mean.
Actually, for me, it was a little opposite, because I was already doing engineering drawing in my 11th and 12th. Achha, so, I already knew what plans, sections, elevations, and we were drafting them already.
I mean, hands on, like, I think. Everybody knows, and everybody knows that a hands-on approach is lacking, but I think it should really be directed towards making students aware of what this field is, what do you have to do, what exactly is expected out of you.
Right.
If you want to stay in it, there are different ways to approach it, different ways to go forward in it.
Absolutely.
And if you don't want to do it, then there are these many ways, these many directions you're going. Right. I mean, what's the point of understanding plan, sections and elevations when you're not really in for it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. And I mean, that's what I'm kind of also trying to do through this, that, you know, tell people that, listen, it's not A, so difficult to start a firm. B, you don't really have to do architecture after getting a BArch, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, through this thing, this platform, through the podcast, I think that's what I'm trying to do. That,
Starting your own firm is really not a difficult task, but to really understand that you have to is a bit challenging.
Yeah,
it's
a long process.
It depends. I mean, for us, it was a bit longer, because then we really spent time developing it.
Right.
You can also, I mean, there are so many people who just start and they figure it out
on the way, and then
the fact is that maybe that also should be.
Analyze. Maybe that's another approach. Surbhi was, you know, she was exploring, and one thing matched with her and one thing didn't.
Yeah,
you know? Maybe that's another way of just going about things. Yeah.
But yeah.
So now let's get to Saya and let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So this is one question that I had when I was thinking of, you know, starting work on my own, which never happened. But the question of finance, financing your own project, because to be honest, not everyone comes from families that are entirely supporting, you know, out of whatever reason. I mean, financially, they can't necessarily support these kind of ventures, right? Financially or otherwise, I mean.
Yes.
So how did you guys manage, and in your opinion, how much investment is required?
I mean, this is a very very interesting question, because finance is something that is very, very important when you're starting your own firm. Very important, and also the most overlooked, because you're never made aware of what it is, because it's not a very formulaic sort of thing. You will learn it as you go in the field, I mean, as you are as you're going forward. But having said that, for us, what I'll tell you what our approach was, and then so we were there were 6 months before we wanted to graduate, and we made a final call that we want to start our own firm. And then the remaining 6 months till we graduate were spent in arranging finance and understanding what really would go into it. Because it's also that we were a little bit prepared. We had that time also to be prepared, because we were still doing our master's. So we spent 6 months in understanding what kind of investment it is going to be, where all do we have to invest,
right,
and whether or not we should arrange for, I mean, this much benchmark money or this much benchmark capital before we even begin.
How did you do all of this?
I'll tell you how. We spoke to a lot of our peers. That's one. Peers who are good at finance in this field.
Very specifically.
Very specifically. You have to really understand that. And then also you have to get help from wherever you can, because our backgrounds are not
from architecture backgrounds. We both are from business families.
So we had
an understanding of how to manage finances.
We took reference from our families. We spoke to peers, and then we almost asked a lot of other friends who just started their work on a benchmark figure of what we should have in our capital.
Right.
I mean, as arranged as capital,
and then
we. Then we arranged for that figure to be spread over a minimum of 5 months because we felt that a minimum of 5 months is what we have to sustain without getting a project. Right. I mean,
that was our estimation.
So we saved a lot of money from our previous our previous work.
Yeah.
And we also saved money which we were supposed to spend on our masters.
Right.
So we took a few. We took off a few trips that we were supposed to, and we saved that sort of
money. But luckily, we didn't require that much because we got our first project very initially.
But even, but then also, when you will start your own, and even if you will get a project, it's not going to be a very, very well-paying project because you're just a beginner and the client is aware of the fact that you're a beginner. So he is going to benchmark your slab you according to market standards.
Yeah,
and there is a standard for a very well-doing firm, for a medium-sized firm, for a beginner firm. It's not going to explode. The capital is not going to explode exponentially.
And you have to charge according to your own.
So how did you decide what to charge? I mean, did you do the analysis of...
We did a market study already.
We levied it against the skill that we were offering and the kind of product that we were offering. For that, we had to analyze if what we are offering is economically lucrative, is scalable. And then we sort of made an adjustment.
Also, I think it depends from location to location. Like the prices of an architect in Delhi and Meerut are also different. In Punjab, it's different. So you have to keep in mind that as well. Otherwise, the client will never agree
but,
to it.
But it's not like... It wasn't like that. It was a go from the first. And I mean, we have lost, I think, 4 or 5 projects because we misplaced our bids. It's because we didn't understand the context, like she said. We didn't understand the fundamentals of it. Mm-hmm. And when you're starting, you also don't know what kind of work you have to do. It's very possible that you undercharge and you have to really work a lot. Or you overcharge for the kind of work that you don't require. You don't know it, but the clients are already aware of it. They already know
because
what
it's their money and they're
their
spending
money.
It.
Yeah, they ask, like we have a circle, they also have a circle. They are very well aware.
Yeah.
So they understand if they are
but
being
overcharged.
But I think
it's very important to understand the finances. Because
very important, yeah.
Then only you can crack a nice project for yourself.
I mean,
because until and unless it's a collaboration between finance and the client's requirement both.
Mm-hmm.
Because your design thinking will match with the client. But at the other end, a project will take at least a year and a half for you. Like for the first project for us, will take at least a year for us.
Yeah.
So you should be able to sustain that year.
Yeah.
So always your project should be divided into those years, the time spread, the time it will take for completion.
And now... The thing is that for us, it was difficult because we were really earning before. So we were sustaining ourselves.
Right.
And then to shift a gear and to come in a phase where you're not doing it for yourself really puts a bit of pressure on you. You have to really, see whether or not you want to be in that space.
Mm. Initially, because you have to build your portfolio.
Right.
You have to build... the amount of work to reach to that scale again.
Right.
Which takes a bit of time.
Yeah,
right.
So if, let's say, you... If I was not earning before, or if I was if I could be taken care by from my family, I wouldn't really think about finances so much.
Right.
But I knew that the bandwidth or the scale that the arc that I have, I was dependent on the fact of what my finances could be and what could be the status. It wasn't really about money for me in the beginning. Like she said, that it's really about the kind of work you do.
Right.
But it is a bit important. So going into this field a bit prepared is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Otherwise, you might
I mean, the pressure really, I think...
You might miss on a good project then, otherwise. That can also happen.
Yeah.
Because you're always thinking about that this project should have this much amount of fees. Mm. And then you might miss on it, and which might also... Because you will build up contact project to project.
I mean, that
which
is...
Which is a very basic case.
Yeah, but that is one thing that you're going to miss your project if you misplace your... bit. That's another finance. But you have to really sustain without money for certain period
that
of time.
True, that
10
true.
Days, 15 days, 5 months, 1 year. Mm. That depends on everybody's journey. But you have that period and you should be prepared for it.
Yeah, it's good to be prepared.
It's good to
already.
Be prepared
good
and
to be
make
prepared.
A business
because
plan.
It will happen. Yeah. It will happen for a startup.
Right.
I mean, we in the Netherlands, we were only allowed to work 10 hours a week.
Right.
And we worked in coffee shops. We did a lot of things that you can do outside.
Right.
Even with the professors, we worked.
Yeah, even with the professors, we worked. So we tried to sort of manage our finances.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's good to be planning already years ahead.
Yeah. But those who are starting their own, their initial investment is actually nothing. When you think about it, when you're really calculating it in your mind, when you think about it on paper, it's nothing. Mm. You only need a laptop and your mind. But you really have to see if it matches with the lifestyle that you have already.
Then
with the
there
kind
is
of,
a real-time calculation that you need to do.
I think it's good to do the calculation and do the planning.
And
I mean,
prepared.
Anyways, everybody who is graduating today as a student gets an opportunity to intern.
Right.
And when we are interning, I mean, I think our parents are a bit, you know, they know that, you know, we can pull them for another year. So it's a good time to really save money.
Right.
But then I know people who have to really sustain themselves as well. So it's money is a tricky component.
It's a tricky. Right. So I like the part where you guys said that, you know, we kind of missed out on a few opportunities in terms of projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also interested in talking about failure as, you know, as a startup.
I'll tell you what the thing is that there is a 100% real chance that you're going to fail every day.
Right.
Because the thing is that no matter how much you work, there are going to be things that you're going to be attempting for the first time.
Right.
And the potential of failure really kicking in comes when you do something that you haven't attempted before.
Right.
And in a startup, you're attempting something different every day.
Yeah,
so every day, every day you're going to, you know, there's a 100% chance that you're going to fail.
Yeah.
We have failed. We have sent wrong drawings.
Right.
Some days we just spend, you know, figuring out what kind of drawing we do.
Right.
That also is a productive, a failure in that sense. So, because, and in some cases, we said that we overcharge or undercharge.
Right.
That is also in itself failure.
Right.
I mean,
I think it's a long process of really... understanding.
Yeah, I mean, 40 projects. I mean, we have pitched, I think, about till 40 projects now. We've only been able to secure some out of it.
Mm.
So, everything is going to be... I mean, in a startup, the bad days are bad days.
Right.
So, when in a startup, when somebody will call you and ask you, how's your day going? And if you have a bad day, you're going to say, oh, I don't know why I did it. It's such a bad day.
But
the good days are very good days.
Yeah.
And you will wake up on a good day, you will really wake up encouraged, motivated, and like just to charge on.
Hmm.
And you will live for those days. So,
right.
I mean, it's when you will experience it, you will know it.
Hmm.
That you know, you will fail.
Also,
you will
I
make frantic calls.
It.
Yeah.
I think bad days are not really always your mistake.
Yeah.
Like architects are really responsible for a lot that happens on site.
Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, this is a
I
good point
say it
actually.
From the experience because not always you do the mistake and you get the. Responsibility
for it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to really take charge because you're the architect and you are the whose vision is getting executed on site.
Yeah.
And then I think it's good to take the responsibility being an architect.
Yeah.
How do you maneuver the situation? Your contractor has really messed up or something, done something really bad.
I think it's a good idea to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And
it's very
the right thing.
You know, the thing is that for us, what we do is that we take certain steps very precisely.
Mm-hmm.
So our work, we keep on time. If we keep our work on time, then everything follows on time.
Right.
That's how it happens on our side.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're precise enough, if we're efficient, everybody is going to be efficient.
Right.
That's
right.
one. That's one check that you can ensure.
Mm.
But if something really gets messed up, then it's really an on-the-feet thinking process.
Right.
You have to resolve it and everything that goes wrong is dissolvable. It's okay. Everything is dissolvable.
Now, there's no end to it.
Yeah, I mean, there
you don't
is,
have to think that it's ending and it's yeah, the wrong end. I was working so hard, I was working so precise, but things will go wrong on set because there's so many people.
I mean, human error.
Exactly.
Yeah. It. I mean,
you can't control it.
You can't discount
for it. The factor of human error cannot be calculated or predicted.
Yeah. But I'm. But for some reason these days, I think. Only very recently we went through something like that.
Yeah.
But I think it was a very thrilling experience in itself.
Yeah.
We
because
got
it happened for just 3 hours, I think.
Yeah, but
it was a lot
Yeah, but it felt like another, like a complete week. Because in those 3 calls, I think I answered about like 40 calls from the site.
Yeah, it was really... Because sometimes everything is on the architect in the end. And you have to take the responsibility. You can't run away from it.
But it's very thrilling, and
it is thrilling.
Even if you're listening to this, and if you think that you know tomorrow I'm going to fail about, and I'm really telling you that it's going to be a tough that span.
Right.
But it's going to be a very thrilling experience.
Because
you're going
in the
to
end,
come out.
You'll be thinking about.
Yeah, you're definitely going to come out stronger, and you're bound to make mistakes.
That's right.
It's good that you make mistakes in your internship or whenever you're working, because then it's not on you; it's on the firm.
Exactly.
But when you start on your own, then you're much more.
Everything
confident.
Is on
actually
you.
That was actually my question. That you know, you guys are starting off, and now I mean, you're so used to being under the wing of someone else, and someone else is doing the dirty work of you know dealing with problems and issues. So yeah.
Initially, it's a bit difficult because you don't understand. Like I'll just give you a very small example. I've made many reflective ceiling drawings, but the first drawing that I had to release on a site was a reflective ceiling, and for one day I wasn't able to understand what do I do with it, how do I approach it.
Yeah.
So it's and you know people who are listening to this and students and I mean who are working they will know what a fraction of work it is really.
Right.
But it was for a day. We didn't really understand what we are supposed to do.
Yeah.
But then once we had sent it,
it's very
built,
funny because we have really done a lot of ceiling drawings.
Yeah.
It's not just even one or two.
Yeah.
Like,
but on the
I've done it for an entire project.
You don't even...
But it's just about doing it yourself and having the confidence you can,
and
you
when
can
it
pull
got,
it off.
Yeah, and when it got executed on the site, I mean, the drawing that we sent it got executed 2 days later. So 2 days later, we go to the site, it's executed. And it gives you so
immense
much confidence.
Joy.
I know.
Yeah, so much confidence.
Yeah, I was
just
so excited.
One simple drawing.
Yeah.
And then you can handle the entire site.
Yeah. I remember getting so excited at the sight of a cabinet. I mean, I remember in my internship, I was like, I drew that.
Yeah, it happens to
it's
everyone.
Real.
Yeah.
These are basic joys, right?
Yeah, it happens to everyone. And I think moments like these are really like landmark
but
moments.
But this only happens in a startup or, you know, in a very initial phase of
Now, like, I think
startup.
Now we have, there has been a day where we have sent out I think 20 ceiling drawings in a day, but that day I will always remember.
Yeah.
And such small little portions,
those
you know,
are the good days really.
Yeah. But you know, like I said, that you're always attempting something new, you're always pushing, you're because you are young, you're fresh, you're right on the block, you're also expected to do different things, unique things. You have to really, in a startup, at least for us, we have to really be on our A game every day. And it's not just an A game with the client, impressing them and convincing them for something, but also negotiating when it comes to structure, lights.
With the rest of the team.
Rest of the team,
of
everything. So you have to really be on your A game.
On your toes always.
On your toes, yeah. So that is a bit of a... That is where you should focus on. I mean, that is what you need apart from your laptop and your brain. You have to really... Be very adaptable, very on your feet, and also...
That also comes with experience, I think, with handling a lot of different consultants. It takes time to understand what contractors will work with, how they're going to collaborate with you. Will they be able to understand your design? Is it still possible? Sometimes you design something, but then you're thinking, that is it possible to construct it on site?
Yeah.
You're sure about it, but still you're questioning
you
yourself.
You have that question.
So
like,
it's about a good collaboration also with all the consultants who are working on site.
I remember we sent, I think, 7 drawings for one detail in the building, and it only required one.
Right.
Whereas we sent 2 drawings for a detail, and it actually required 20.
Oh
so
my God,
you don't know. You learn.
It's a back and forth.
It takes time
forth,
to just
process.
Understand
but
how people.
But this phase is only. This phase I think for us, we are just beginning.
Yeah.
So maybe we are feeling that, okay, maybe this is going to, die down, but we are going to be dependent on the podcast and hear other colleagues who have been longer in this to know whether they share the same thing or
So great. I mean, I also like wanted to talk about the team that comes with the architect, and after this we'll wrap it up. So a lot of different people have different takes on the contractor and the team and the MEP consultants and the structure guys and all that. Some people believe that, you know, it's nicer to work with a new team every time and they somehow work that way. But some architects feel that, you know, they should have this constant team of from contractors to your structure guy, they're always the same people that you work with, and they believe in investing time to, you know, hone their skills and, you know, build that relationship. What do you guys, what is your take?
I think it depends from firm to firm.
Right.
It also depends on the skill set that that the founding partners have.
Right.
So let's say Surbhi has a certain skill set and I have a certain skill set. We know what we lack.
Right.
So we want to keep a person who has that, who has to offer that lacking bit for a longer period of time, because then we will be a stronger team. But let's say with contractors, with technicians, it really is about, you know, them understanding what you want to deliver. So sometimes it comes easier with people who are already working on your team, already are aware of what you do. And for certain portions in this profession, there are certain elements, stonework or different elements, for example, in this direction, that you should depend on people who you have already worked with.
Right.
But there are certain, but you know, this field is so subjective. You're always innovating, always creating something new. And when you do that, you will always need new people who are capable enough of doing it.
Yeah, that's true. Because I think a lot of times you don't also have option of having the same people, because it depends on the location of the project. So it's not at the architect's convenience also always.
I've heard that, like, well-established, obviously, architects who've been in the field for, like, 30 years and have the money, they've flown down
their team. Yeah, that's true.
So if,
because
like,
for their own convenience, because they'll be able to explain the person on site very easily.
Because
that is true.
So I mean, do you guys see yourself doing that maybe 10 years?
You know, this word explain is such a small word, but you really, when you have to really explain things on how, on when they have to get executed, it can really take a lot of time, a lot of manual effort of making drawings, of making visuals, of going to the site and explaining things.
Right.
That kind of time and investment you don't have when you have multiple projects going on.
Absolutely.
Also, you don't want to invest that time in explaining a new person always every time.
Yeah.
Sometimes a structure guy who's always working with you for last few years, he knows how you're drawing. He understands your way of drawing also.
Yeah, so I understand when people, Who when they have the resources and when they have this sort of this number of projects that they have, that they are dependent on their set team, and it's very, very, very easy to do. But for us, our practice is it's a very small practice.
Right.
We have people who we want constantly around, but because our projects are so widespread around Delhi, it's not possible for us to really depend on one team, because they all are getting executed at the same time, and it's not possible for us to have the same person at five sites at the same time. So we have to really forge new bonds. Also, our clients are the clients that we are getting are always insisting on trying somebody else. And that's how
we are going. And sometimes it's also not your choice always.
But what we do is that we have linked our contractors on all the sites. They know
what's happening where
what's happening where.
It's a smart move.
I think what it does also is that it gives your contractor or your technician or your teammate a certain kind of confidence, that you know, this person is associating me with me for value, for adding value to my work, for adding value to the other work.
When that understanding is there, then it's very good for both the people.
Because
it's a very healthy collaboration, and then you do good work.
Because,
not just to finish it.
One, I remember there was one portion of the design that was similar, and both the contractors adopted two different ways of doing it. And that's when it first struck to us, and that's when we first realized that maybe we should have put them in touch. Then they would know that, this is going to work, so and
we
maybe
we learned.
It's not like
you actually learn a lot from your consultants also,
right? Yeah.
Because everything you don't know, because
absolutely
you can't just being an architect, you don't know it all
exactly. Yeah.
So even I remember in one project we're doing automation, and he's telling us how you can change themes and in the lights.
It's a
right.
And this is something we operated a lot in the Netherlands.
Right. Yeah.
But here it's
it
not
becomes
that
very technical,
universal.
You know. Mm-hmm. Something that is something like you know, in this studio when I see it where we are sitting, everything is something I can relate with. But
but
I don't understand the technicality of it.
Right.
And on your on the site, everything becomes very tangible, very technical, very quickly.
Mm.
So you have to be really, you know, you have to be in the grip of it.
Right.
And everybody in the team wants to deliver a good project.
Absolutely.
So you have to work with them and also allow them to expand.
Hmm.
Also do learn from them whatever they have done on different sites.
Hmm.
And also give them the opportunity to interact with different people who have different approaches.
Right.
It's a learning process for everyone. And
right.
for us on the site, everybody has been very open to learning from each other.
Which is great. So, anything else you would like to tell our listeners? Like a parting message?
I think we've said a lot already.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. It was a pleasure having you guys here.
Thank you.
Honestly,
thank you.
I've learned a lot, and I'm sure that people who are listening to this will definitely learn a lot as well. So thank you for tuning in. We have a new episode coming next week. So please visit. Keep listening. Bye-bye.